Shalom LaYehudim, Shalom LeBnei Noach, Shalom LeGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Aleph Be'elul, Parashas Ki Tse'etzeh, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 25 August 2015, webcasting from the source of the word Jew that the Jewish state refuses to call its own. Well, maybe one baby step was taken in that direction, finally, yesterday, when President Reuven Rivlin met with leaders of the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, and according to Agence France-Presse, he said, quote, "Israel has the right to settle in the West Bank." Though I doubt he said West Bank. That's the name preferred by anti-Jews to cover up the real names of these hills found on all maps throughout history until just a generation ago. Ruvi Rivlin, whose family has been here about 200 years, grew up on the secular right, and he said, quote, "I love the land of Israel with all my heart. I have never and will never give up on this land. For me, our right to this land is not a matter of political debate. It is a basic fact of modern Zionism. We must not give anyone the sense that we are in any doubt about our right to our land. For me, the settlement of the land of Israel is an expression of that right, our historical right, our national right," close quote. Okay, he is a Jew raised in the non-religious revisionist movement, and as such, he knows that the revisionist movement emerged as a protest against the mainstream Zionist movement led by Chaim Weizmann, who was the immediate successor to Herzl as head of the Zionist organization. The break came in 1925, when the mainstream accepted the amputation of Eastern Palestine, as it was labeled in all books at the time, on the other side of the Jordan. The classical maps of Palestine place the Jordan River slightly right of center in the country. The Jordan River was never, in Jewish thinking, reckoned to be its eastern boundary. In the first half of the 20th century, it was common to talk of Transjordan and Cisjordan, C-I-S hyphen, as the terms for east and west of Palestine. And when the mandate provided for and went through with the detachment of Transjordan from the mandate's mandate to create a Jewish homeland, the mainstream movement shrugged and protested, but in the end accepted the move, versus Zev Jabotinsky, who was outraged, who rebelled, and left the organization, established his own revisionist Zionist organization. And the revision was to go back to the beginning and to see the whole land of Israel as rightfully belonging to the Jewish people. He and his followers were outraged that Eretz Yisrael, on the other side of the river, was taken away from them. Not only that, in a little known chapter that I deal with in my book, by this time the northern tier of Eretz Yisrael had also been amputated and given to the French, who shared the area between the two states it created, Lebanon and Syria. So President Rivlin, of course, grew up in a community that rejected that acquiescence and for sure would never surrender the right to land west of the river, a.k.a. Judea and Samaria. So bully for Ruvi Rivlin for speaking this way. He has been unmoved by the politically correct new doctrine, according to which this real estate belongs to the ancient Palestinian people and has from time immemorial the Jews stole it from them. That's not the way he sees things. Still, Rivlin does a couple of things here that are characteristic of secular, even patriotic Israelis, which reflect the weakness of secular Zionism, which has failed completely to eradicate anti-Semitism, one of its goals. Secular Zionism built the state, hats off to it, but it did not reach the goal Herzl and his Zionists had hoped for, an end to the irrational abuse of Jews by Gentiles, murderous abuse by them, sadistic, satanic abuse. What Rivlin did is what I have seen Netanyahu do and the mayor of Jerusalem, Neil Barkat, do, and I find it most peculiar. When they wax patriotic like this, they call up historic rights. Bibi, I think, in Congress also raised the specter of Jerusalem as our capital for thousands of years. Yesterday, Rivlin spoke of our national rights to build homes and communities in Judea and Samaria, but none of them ever references two things. One, modern Zionism's concrete achievements achieved with blood, sweat, and tears, or the religion of the Jewish people, which I believe, which I know, is the backbone, the heart, the mind, the soul of the Jewish people. It's not the land. We have lived more years without the land than with it. None of these Israelis sing the praises of the pioneers who drained swamps, who died from malaria, who reclaimed desert wastes and turned them into apple orchards and orange groves, some of which yours truly has worked in. No mention is made of heroic military efforts, the sacrifice of thousands, the cruel aggression of our neighbors hungry for our land, as if our neighbors did not have enough land. It's almost as if the Zionist movement never existed. The reference to King David's rule they can bring up, but then they jump to the present. But above all, none of them ever says this land is rightly Jewish land in international law. The anonymous AFP journalist here felt it necessary to remind his readers that, quote, Jewish settlements are considered illegal in international law. And I say this has got to stop. Where in international law does it say this? Which law do people have in mind when they do say it? In which book of laws can we find it? The answer pretty much is no. What more sophisticated anti-Jews will do is parry and say, yes, this refers to the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949, which forbids creating new communities in land taken in battle. First of all, the language in that text prohibits, quote, individual or mass forcible transfers. The occupying power shall not deport or transfer parts of its own civilian population into the territory it occupies. Yeah, forcible transfers, deportation. No Jew was forcibly transferred. There were no deportations of anybody. The Jews who moved into the territories taken in 1967 did so on their own initiative. Nobody forced them, and they settled on barren acreage. Nobody among the enemy was displaced or lost his home. Article 49, published in 1949, was written, so to speak, looking backwards at the horror of World War II, when one of its most salient facts was the war in Europe. With Nazi Germany maniacally overrunning one country after another, claiming to be the master race and therefore having a right to do that. And wherever they went, they rounded up Jews and deported them from their native country into Poland, where they built the death camps. Article 49 was written in reaction to what the Nazis did, and there is no comparison whatsoever between Israel's rightful self-defense in 1967 and subsequent development of the land taken from the enemy, as per the League of Nations mandate for Palestine, whose principal mandate was explicitly the creation of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And there's no territory more central to classical Palestine than Judea and Samaria. There's no comparison. Judea is where the word Jew comes from. If Jews have no right to Judea, they have no right to any piece of real estate on this planet. So, on the one hand, it was encouraging to hear an Israeli politician use the word right to describe Jewish life reborn in Judea and Samaria. But still, we are a long way from Israelis being able to stand up to and confront world anti-Jewry face to face and say there is not now, nor has there ever been, a Palestinian nation with national rights to the land of Palestine, to use the language of the League of Nations mandate, which was legally incorporated into the charter of the successor organization called the United Nations. Israelis are tone deaf, I'm afraid, to enemy propaganda and unaware that the entirety of world hatred against us is a function of the fantasy of a Palestinian nation whose ancient homeland the Jews stole from them. I don't know about you, but I find this state of affairs, Israel's silence, to be bizarre. That's why I wrote my book.
Mila, ach mila, ach mila. דבך אל תראי אל תראי בימים סוערים אירי הו אירי כי נחשול זה הגל וענן זה השחור יהום זה הסער אך היום עוד ירום חוז בחחוז לא הרפה במילה בתפילה בדמעה כואבת בדמייך בקדושייך בקבריך עשרות בבניין אבותייך באפרך לא אבגור
מילה לי אלייך חברות
Today, there were two separate stories, which really are the same story. One was about the famous historian who moved lights as a Hollywood actress, Natalie Portman, who was bothered that Jews focus on the Holocaust at the expense of other genocides. The other story was about a new book being launched at the Van Leer Institute in Jerusalem, which finds a similarity between the Holocaust and the Nakba. Both these stories reflect ignorance and cowardice and the narcissism of Jewish anti-Judaism. First, Natalie Portman, whose father is an Israeli, her mother an American Jewess. Natalie was born in Jerusalem, but at age three they went to live in America. She attended the Jewish day schools of the conservative movement, then went on to Harvard. On Friday, in London's anti-Jew newspaper, The Independent, she said in an interview, that the Holocaust was no more tragic than other genocides. She spoke of her girlhood when she discovered in the news the Hutus doing to the Tutsis, which she did not know and probably still does not know what the Tutsis had done to the Hutus in the past. Massacre en masse, on a mass scale. And of course, she sermonized, quote, "We need to be reminded that hatred exists at all times, and remind us to be empathetic to other people that experienced hatred also." Well, J-Post yesterday ran the headline, quote, "Natalie Portman raises hackles by saying Holocaust no more tragic than other genocides," close quote. And here I fault the Jewish people as a whole for tolerating literally the theft of the word genocide, which was invented by a Polish-Jewish survivor, whose family did not survive. He lost 49 relatives. Raphael Lemkin also happened to be a first-rate linguist and philosophical theorist of language who could speak 9 of them and read in 14 of them. He invented the word genocide because there was no word in any of these languages that described what had happened to the Jewish people. Tragically, this word in our time has been turned into a synonym for massacre, when it is not. Genocide includes massacres, but it's referring to its goal, not its method. Its goal is the extermination of a nation, that is, everyone in the nation. And of course, it is not exclusively a territorial goal. What Germany's National Socialists were after was every Jew on the planet who had to be tracked down and murdered. In this sense, there has been in human history only one genocide, which failed. The Jews survived. The Holocaust. It's the only one. The enlightened in our time say the Turks committed genocide against the Armenians, when that's simply not true, if the German example sets the standard. What the Turks did to the Armenians was monstrous, satanic, cruel, barbaric, savage, criminal. I knew personally some of the survivors, but it wasn't genocide. There is not a scrap of evidence that the Turks were bent on hunting down Armenians all over the world to kill them. What the Turks wanted was the land on which these Armenians were living. And being barbarians, they did not scruple to do their worst to drive them off the land. More than 1 million Armenians were butchered, raped, maimed, mutilated, tortured, and of course, murdered. But there's no record of any Turk saying Armenians are not human beings, but gigantic microbes. That's what Hitler believed about the Jews. He believed the Jew was a gigantic germ with the unbelievable ability to mimic what a human being looks like and sounds like and talks like. But make no mistake, the Jews were out to overrun Germany and then the whole world, he believed. In his demented mind, Hitler saw in the final solution a preemptive form of self-defense. Do to the Jews first what the Jews want to do to the Germans. In previous generations, Jews were a religious person's devil incarnate. In the post-Christian scientific age, they were scientifically a menace to mankind, almost a health problem, these germs. The Germans made propaganda films likening Jews to swarming rats. And there is nothing like this in the wretched behavior of the Turks. They just acted like their own forebears, the conquering Ottomans. They acted like Attila and his Huns, like Genghis Khan and his Mongols, like the Caesars of Rome, for whom building an empire meant overrunning one people after another mercilessly. The Romans were masters of cruelty in this. So, bottom line, the very concept of genocides in the plural is an anti-Semitic one that Natalie Portman and too many others have fallen victim to. Its purpose is to look away from the Holocaust and diminish its demonic force. The hunt to murder all Jews in the world resulted in World War II and the death of 60 million people and the reduction of cities to rubble. What the Turks did to the Armenians, what the Hutus and the Tutsis have done to each other, never led to such world historical destruction and death. And this corruption of the term genocide is tragic not only for us Jews, but for the world no less, for the bulk of those 60 million who are not Jews. The Holocaust should be engraved in the hearts of all men, particularly in Europe, non-Jews, as a warning to what lunatic mass Jew hatred can lead to. Look at what's unfolding before our eyes these days. Muslims are inveterate Jew haters, and the Muslim in the Oval Office is one of them, and he has succeeded in allowing Iran to build atomic bombs, which have the potential of triggering a Middle East bristling with them, which increases the probability exponentially of some lunatic dictator at some point thinking it would be a good idea to bomb not just Israel, but other enemies in the region, and the consequences to humanity be damned. Barack Hussein Obama is an evil man.
Matovu
מלכותך ישראל 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 ואני ברוב חסדך אבוא ואיתך אשתחווה אליך קודשך בעירתך ואני תפילתי לך השם את רצון אלוקים ברוב חסדך ענני באמת אישך
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. I said before there are or were two separate stories today that really are the same story. First, Natalie Portman, and now the second story about this book being published in a few weeks by the publishing arm of the United Kibbutz Movement, and that old-time socialist collectivist mockery of Judaism, and all religion, really, coming out in conjunction with the Van Leer Institute in Rehavia, Jerusalem, which represents Western culture and its most liberal and corrupt. Any and all progressive movements are celebrated at Van Leer, founded by a couple of wealthy Dutch Jews. This new book is called, quote, The Holocaust and the Nakba, : Memory, National Identity, and Jewish-Arab Partnership. Dear me, that last word there is the giveaway. In the 1920s, the brand new Hebrew University was led by an American Jew, Judah Magnus, a Reform rabbi who was part of a small group of intellectuals calling themselves the Covenant of Peace, Brit Shalom, and they believe the solution to the violence in Mandatory Palestine, being visited upon the Jews by Arabs, was to transcend the chauvinistic aspiration for a Jewish homeland and opt for a binational state. A variation on a theme, really, still extant. In the Oslo Abomination, which envisioned a condominium ownership of the land west of the river, a mutually cooperative sharing between the State of Israel and a state of Palestine. Well, here is this book's subtitle, ending in the word partnership. When I say New York style, forget about it. Ain't gonna happen. There is a bottomless pit, an abyss, between Jewish civilization and Arab culture that cannot be bridged. We saw it the other day in that video clip, the link I put up, of that Israeli actor refusing to call airline pirates terrorists. No, they're freedom fighters, he said. This leadership is a cousin of Natalie Portman's belief in the equality of all genocides because it refuses to recognize the uniqueness of the fate of the Jewish people. And like Natalie Portman and millions like her who recoil from the Jews claiming something so important as uniquely theirs, so these dopes at Van Leer and in the kibbutz movement have swallowed enemy propaganda that there's some equivalence between the Holocaust and the Nakba. First of all, they're blind to what the Arabs see in that equation. They don't see equality with the Jews, other than saying that as the Jews suffered from the Nazis, so the Jews have acted like Nazis to the ancient ones. Indeed, the official Van Leer spokesman said the book grew out of meetings between Jewish and Palestinian citizens. And I cannot forget that in the first decades of the state, until very recently, the Arabs here were called Israeli Arabs, not Palestinian Israelis, as the fashion has become. The problem with these post-Jewish liberals is their stupidity in swallowing the term Palestinians, because what that term does is give these people titled to the land of Palestine when the native nations never heard of such a people, and the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem at the time denied there was even such a land as Palestine. In both stories, Portman's interview and this one, there's the same post-Jewish reluctance to claim the Jews as a unique people. No, we're just like other people. No chosenness here. We had our genocide, and other peoples have their genocides, and ours was no more tragic than anybody else's. And here at Van Leer, the same psychological imperative is at work, stripping the Jews of their unique history and beliefs. What, after all, is Christianity and Islam but the plagiarizing of Judaism? Hence the cliches, the three great monotheistic religions, a city holy to three religions. But I say, no, I don't say either of the other two as monotheistic. Both claim to worship the God of the Jews found in the Jews' Bible, but each added a human being to the cosmos at his side. God and Jesus, Allah and Muhammad. The Roman Church even blatantly claims to be the real Israel. In a word, everyone wants a piece of the action of what we have. And when we insist on sole ownership, we're called greedy Jews who don't want to share with non-Jews. Early Christians said the covenant with God is not exclusive to one people. Everyone has a share in that covenant. And at the moment, the Jews are really being greedy and refusing to share Palestine with the Palestinians. Two states for two peoples. And the fools at Van Leer have swallowed that lie, hook, line, and sinker. Their book's subtitle is about national identity, Israeli national identity, Palestinian national identity. And it's precisely because these are post-Jews. They're happy to want to share this land with another nation. They want to share their capital. And never mind that there's no record in the annals of the human race of two nationalities sharing one capital city for two states. The fantasies that anti-Jew, Jewish, and non-Jewish-like people come up with is the history of Jewish suffering. The patriotic NGO Im Tirzu is protesting the abomination of this book launch at Van Leer, and I say bravo.
כשילדים הולכים לישון יש לומר להם כמה יפים הם, כמה יפים הם שהם קמים לומר להם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם אני משתוקק לראות את היום שילדים קמים בבוקר וההורים שלהם לא יכולים להפסיק לנשק אותם ולחבק אותם ולומר יש לומר להם כמה יפים הם כמה יפים הם שהם קמים לומר להם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יש לומר להם כמה יפים הם כמה יפים הם שהם קמים לומר להם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם יפה הוא העולם אני משתוקק לראות את היום ילדים קמים בבוקר
רבה.
Okay, last item. Maybe you saw the news that ISIS at Palmyra in Syria, famous for its antiquities, beheaded the chief architect there and exploded one of the more important temples. Like the Muslims in Afghanistan, remember, in 2001, who shelled and destroyed those historic, gigantic Buddhist statues at Bamiyan that were carved into a mountainside. And this is, once again, the Arab-Muslim relationship to the past that marks them as barbarians. In Mosul, too, I think it was a few months ago, they shattered and smashed famous statues in a museum that were carved in ancient times. What they do to archaeology is what they do to history in general. Smash it. Deny it. The Holocaust never happened. Ancient Palestinians have the right to their ancient homeland. History is anything you want it to be. Islam is on the march. Barbarism is on the march. And that evil enemy in the Oval Office is one of them. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night. I'll be back on Willing on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.